storyteller tonight is Pete Geither. Pete is a retired assistant dean of the College of Fine Arts at Illinois State, where he taught arts management, theater photography, computer graphic design, and entrepreneurship. He is the artistic director of The Living Canvas, a performance art company active in Chicago. He's worked in business and in government on Broadway and as a Fuller Brush salesman, a film festival judge, and a traveling lounge musician. You've got a lot of stories, Peter. Pete's a theater photographer, a fine art photographer, a piano player, a drug policy expert, a foodie, and hosts New York theater tours for students and adults. He has a Master of Fine Arts in Performing Arts Management from Brooklyn College and a degree in theater from Cornell College. And tonight, Pete's a storyteller. Please join me in welcoming Pete Geither.
Eighteen months ago, I had a unique experience that had a profound impact on me. This is the story of my little bicycle trip. I had lost a lot of weight, got healthy, and I really loved riding my bicycle. In fact, I rode it for about 1,000 miles in 1 year. Not races or marathons or hills. Mostly just nice level trails, you know, often with a brew pub as the final destination. But I really liked doing it. So there was this nice chilly Wednesday in March, and I hopped on my bike, got on Constitution Trail with the families and dogs and joggers, and had a little fun on the trail, stopped at Rosa Parks Park. And I got back on the trail, turned left onto the trail, just past a family. And I realized that my right glove wasn't all the way on. And I reached over to pull it on a little better, and the handlebars wobbled a little bit, and I reached over with the left hand to grab it, and the bike got unbalanced and sort of just toppled over to the left, and I fell awkwardly, and my glasses went flying. Well, that was silly. Embarrassing, too, with all these people around, you know. So I went, okay, well, everybody's seen this. Hey, you okay, mister? Yes, I'm fine. At least I'm not hurt, you know. And I was just a silly fall. Thank you. He said, well, we'll be down here if you need anything. Thanks again. I figured, at least, you know, I didn't get a bruise or a scrape, which is the worst that you could get from such a fall. So I went to get up and didn't. My left leg wouldn't move. Odd. You sure you're okay, mister? Yeah, I just need to catch my breath. I'll be heading home. Thanks. Went to get up again and didn't. My left leg wasn't accepting commands. It was as if all the electrical impulses had just stopped there and nothing was happening. I didn't understand. At this point, the slightest wispy edges of the words broken leg drifted through my consciousness and were immediately rejected. They surfaced again. And I replaced them with hairline fracture, which was still ridiculous, but at least I could think about that, you know? So, and I thought, well, if I have a hairline fracture, what do I do? Well, I should have somebody take a look at it. I'll get on my bike and ride to the doctor. No, that doesn't compute. I'll have somebody take me to the doctor who I could call 911, and my brain exploded. Call 911 for this nothing? So I called, and they were there in seconds. And I apologized to them. I said, I'm really sorry. I feel just fine, but for some reason, my leg isn't cooperating. They said, they were very nice. They didn't mind. They said, no problem. And they went to lift me on the stretcher, and I screamed. The orthopedic surgeon later described to me what had happened in words that sounded like absolute gibberish to me, involving a tibia and fibula and tibial flat toe and comminuted fracture and knee. What I gathered was that apparently I had fallen just perfectly on the side of my leg, so that one bone had broken and driven into the other bone, shattering it, sending fragments into my knee and all around my leg, and so that nothing was really connected anymore down there. The police were great. They were very nice. They offered to take my undamaged bicycle home for me while I got in the ambulance and got to ride 5.5 miles in Illinois post-winter potholes all the way to OSF. Buckle your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy ride. Emergency was a cacophony of sounds as I blocked out all visual stimuli by closing my eyes to the pain. There was a makeshift IV in the back of my hand in the ambulance because they couldn't get to my arms because of the jackets. As they cut off my jeans, I remember smiling slightly as I thought about the hole in my back pocket that had bothered me this morning and would no longer. Promises of morphine. And they set up incomplete pictures of my leg with a jury-rigged x-ray machine on top of my stretcher. All I'm getting is air, not blood. The back of the hand IV was fine for the ambulance, but no good for the ER. So they wrestled off the jackets and put needles in my arms, taking blood samples, promises of morphine, more promises of morphine, and the realization that morphine had been coming all along in the IV and had been having no effect. The hospital staff referred to the orthopedic surgeon as the guy who takes on the really complicated fractures. You know, the Sondheim-like musical complexities of trauma scores, you know? And he happened to be in the hospital that day visiting a patient that he was going to be operating on the next day. And the hospital staff went up to him and said, you know, you really ought to take a look at this guy. And so he did. And he looked at the x-rays, and he came in to talk to me, and figuring that I might be a little fuzzy, and making sure that I wouldn't have words like hairline fracture dancing in my head, he says to me, you messed up your leg really bad. Really, really bad. It's going to be at least 6 to 8 months of recuperation. You're going to have the knee replaced at some point. Your leg may never be exactly the same again. Tomorrow, I'm going to do a long operation on your leg, probably around 3 p.m. I said, okay, will somebody tell me where I need to be? Back to emergency room cacophony and failed promises of pain relief, which wasn't really a surprise to me, as pain medication has never really had much impact on me. And the staff was instructed to put a splint on my leg. Now, imagine, if you will, the lower part of my leg is essentially a sack of bone fragments surrounded by muscle tissue and nerve endings. Putting a splint on this is sort of like taking a duffel bag of bones, wrapping Velcro around it so it doesn't sag as much. And so I was wheeled to room 223 and waited. Having surgery 24 hours away when you're in pain is an excruciating experience as you stare at that whiteboard with its false promise of hope, as you count down to when you can have the next morphine shot, which will, of course, have no effect. Finally, I'm wheeled down these corridors, down elevators, through the hospital. At every point that I was passed off, they asked me to verify what I was having done to me, which is what they do in the hospital. And they seemed to accept the answer that I was going to have someone rearrange my bone fragments into something more coherent in my left leg. So I get down to the basement, a dark, dingy, uncertain lighting. And I'm there, and they're trying to move me onto the operating table. After several attempts and tiring of my screams, they just decide to put me out. Major continuity shift. The setting, an indistinct room somewhere between the size of an office and a stadium. Walls, partitions, gray, film noir. Next to me is a woman playing the role of a random person selected to sit with an unaccompanied patient after post-op recovery. Poised, soft-spoken, undemanding. I arrive in this scene, mid-consciousness, find myself already explaining to her that none of this matters. It isn't real. That she isn't real. This room doesn't exist. And despite that fact, I thank her because I've been enjoying the conversation with her. But I know that she's not real, that this is all a fluke in the time continuum that happened back at the park. And once it's corrected, this part's all going to erase. Either that, or it's going to be the inception kick of the song that's going to take me out of that dream world and put me back into the real world. And it's obvious, the signs are all around me. And this man comes up to me and demands answers, interrupting us and saying, "Do you know what just happened? Do you know where you're going next?" Suddenly paranoid that this is some sort of an attempt to prove my sanity, that I pull myself together and I say, I was just in surgery where a nice man presumably successfully reassembled the bones into something resembling a leg. Now I'm recovering from anesthesia and they're going to wheel me to room 223. He said, "You'll be fine." The surgeon's assistant came to my room, said he's helped the surgeon with every operation he's done for years. And this was the worst leg he'd ever seen, ever. It was a long operation, 3 hours, and it went well. The word considering was left unspoken. And he showed me the x-ray, three titanium plates and 22 screws. The longest titanium plate, they actually had to get brought in from Champagne in order to have one long enough to do it. And then the knee just sort of sitting on top of it. And you know, I would look at my leg and it didn't seem like it was part of me. It was foreign. I didn't want it. It was like some sort of an alien tumor next to my right leg. I asked them if they could just unscrew it and put in a nutrient bath until it was healed and then put it back on when it was all better, because I didn't want to look at it, but they said no. And I hallucinated. I'd be looking at the clock on the wall, and suddenly I realized there was another clock. It was a little bit a different location, and it was brighter and cleaner, and it had a sans serif font instead of the serif font. And then I look closer, I go, "Oh, wait, no, that actually is a serif font as well. And no, it's not that much brighter, and it's not any cleaner, and in fact, it's in the exact same location." And the same thing would happen with the OSF logo and a really colorful flyer on falling. And for some reason, with Adam Fox's head, and I'm not sure why. And I kept thinking of The Matrix and Neo seeing the two black cats, and was it the same cat? And I didn't know, you know. And the thing is, I'm no stranger to hallucinations. I mean, I went to college in Iowa in the 70s, which is when the 60s got to Iowa. And I spent my fair share of evenings in my dorm room listening to Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon and watching the wood grain in my cabinet doors turn into faces and creatures. But I never had hallucinations where the objects just dramatically morphed into themselves. I like it. I became a real celebrity in the hospital. A med tech comes into me and says, "I heard about you. They were talking about you in the hallway, about this guy that, did you hear about this guy that really messed up his leg falling off a bike?" No, a bicycle. Why I tell this story? This was a very disruptive and challenging event for me. And it was easy to get kind of despondent about the whole thing and wonder, why did this happen to me? Why did this have to happen at all? Why did I even go for a bike ride on a cold morning in March? So it was important for me to take charge of the narrative, to make it heroically absurd, to make it a story, an entertaining adventure of mythical insignificance. What's next? Thank you.